This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. When was the last time you received a card or letter in the mail, other than a bill, or even sent one yourself? Probably quite some time ago, I would assume. But then what does this mean for the Postal Service? Is this still a business at crossroads facing structural decline? Or is it an essential service with social value? To find out, we speak to Charles Brewer, newly appointed Group CEO for Post Malaysia, who will also tell us about his plans to turn around this loss-making listed company. Now, like I just said, postal services globally are facing tremendous challenges. But the reality is that for Post Malaysia, there's been 2.5 consecutive years of losses, slightly more than 700 million ringgit already. So I am very sure you have been hired for a turnaround plan. So what's your strategy that other CEOs perhaps have not tried?
The foundation for how we're going to turn around Post Malaysia is really leveraging our fantastic past and honouring our past while focusing fully on tomorrow. So huge upside opportunity, which we can talk about through COVID, but it is about getting the basics right first. I think that's the foundation of what we'll do going forward.
So will the basics look a little bit like Deutsche Post? Because you did spend 34 years at DHL, which is actually owned by Deutsche Post. And that's an example, a good example of a legacy business that has transitioned successfully to become one of the world's largest courier companies. Is that Post Malaysia's future?
I would definitely leverage my experience from DHL. But also, you know, most recently I was with Canada Post working on their transformation. And, you know, probably a good one for your listeners is that the challenges that Post Malaysia face are not unique nor owned by Post Malaysia. They're the same challenges that every postal operator faces across 220 countries worldwide, which is simplistically that, and as you said in your introduction, mail, you know, the traditional business of postal operators, the mail business, has been declining pretty consistently for the last sort of 5 or 10 years, and certainly through COVID, that has accelerated. So you're faced with that sort of, you know, structural change that is irreversible. But on the flip side, the fantastic opportunity is parcels. You know, when I think about Post Malaysia and the turnaround, and bear in mind that I've been here for 7 weeks. So I put in brackets a small apology that I'm still learning and learning a lot. Our turnaround will be based on four pillars. Number one is our people. So really creating highly motivated and engaged employees. And if you go to any business, any facility, anywhere, if the human being who greets you, and it's still a people business, isn't smiling from ear to ear, you get put off straight away. So we've got to make sure that the people that work for Post Malaysia really love working for Post Malaysia. Number two is service. Very honestly, our service level hasn't been where it should be for lots of different reasons. And COVID has definitely played its part in that. But it is about making sure we get our service to the right levels. Pillar number three, customers. You know, and this is a really important point in terms of the foundational piece of postal operators in the e-commerce world, is that not all customers are good customers. When e-commerce first started and first started to create that boom of parcels, Deutsche Post, Canada Post, Australia Post, Royal Mail, all the postal operators opened their doors and said, come on in. And it flooded our system with parcels, and COVID accelerated that. But I think we need to be a little bit cleverer around which customers are the right customers for us going forward, and making sure they create value for us as much as we create value for them. So that's the third one. And fourthly, we're not a charity. We need to make sure that we deliver a dollar to the bottom line, a ringgit, a single ringgit will do, so that we can reinvest that ringgit. And to your question, those four pillars are very, very consistent with Deutsche Post DHL. So I think we can leverage that experience and bring it to Post Malaysia.
I'm just wondering, you know, you're a foreign CEO in a very Malaysian company. You're not the first. We've had some before. I think most notable, of course, is Malaysian Airlines, where there were two foreign CEOs who actually, if I'm not wrong, left before their contracts were up. And I'm sure you're here to make some difficult decisions and maybe even unpopular ones. Do you think that there will be a clash of cultures then, perhaps? And the other thing is, would you have the backing of the major shareholders when it comes to making these unpopular decisions?
So, two questions. So on the first one, I've been very fortunate that I've worked and operated in more than 112 countries around the world. And every region that I've worked in, every continent, I think I've been asked that same question. And I first came to Malaysia in 2002, I think it was. And I learned a lot about myself when I came into Malaysia and a lot about how I operate, about my biases, conscious or otherwise. And so I've taken that and in each market and each country I've worked in, I've learned to adapt. I pride myself that I can adapt to the Malaysian culture and post-Malaysia's culture, because it's not just about my views and thoughts of how we ought to operate. It's also about acclimating to the environment that you're operating in. So you need to be flexible enough to do both. And I think it's one of my strengths. I love some of the comments I've read around being a Mansale and a Guaylo and blah, blah. And, you know, I guess the proof is in the pudding. You know? So ask me that question in a year's time.
Okay.
Ask me that question in a year's time, whether or not it became a hindrance or not. And yeah, and then your second question, really fortunate to have, you know, majority owner, which is DRB Highcom, who are a great organization. Group managing director is ex Post Malaysia. I see him as a friend as much as a chair of the board of Post Malaysia. He's offering me hugely valuable advice, as are many others on the board, I hasten to add. And it's about listening. It's about listening and adapting. So I have their support. I'm only 7 weeks in, so I hope I continue to have their support going forward.
Going back to the people, because you highlighted there's more than 20,000 staff at Post Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And if I look at the numbers, staff costs are 42% of operating costs. And if I compare that with our regional peers, so let's take Singapore Post.
Yep.
Their staff cost is 23% of operating costs.
Yep.
So this perhaps hints that staff rationalization is probably on your cards. Is that going to be the low-hanging fruit that you're going to try and do immediately?
Good question. And you know, the Singapore parallel probably isn't the fairest, because operating in Malaysia versus operating in Singapore, I think, are totally different. We have a very large geography.
For sure, but perhaps 42% is still quite high by any standards.
Yeah, I think it's a fair comment. And I think, again, it's deserving of an answer. So two comments I'd make on it. First and foremost, COVID has had huge impacts on many industries. I'm very lucky that I work in logistics, and as are the people that work in Post Malaysia, because we've seen the opposite. So we've seen sort of 25, 30% growth in volumes in parcels. Whilst mail has declined, we're still seeing huge, huge growth in parcel volume and packet volume. Which means that you need to have people that can deliver it. So I don't think there's going to be a challenge on the front line. We've got more than enough growth to justify the environment that we operate in. I think there's a few questions that do need answering around that. One is, you know, the back office costs. If you look at these sort of head office costs, that seems quite high if I look at a comparison to others. So we're looking at why that is and what makes sense there going forward for sure. And secondly, the other part of that is, you know, every minute of delivery, every second of delivery is worth cents and pennies in logistics, particularly in domestic operations. So you really need to get very efficient in what you do. And efficiency comes from obviously your process, but it also comes from the technology you deploy. So I think where we will be looking to invest is particularly in automation and technology. We already have some great automation, but there's plenty of upside. And that automation and technology will bring greater productivity, greater health and safety for our employees, and also greater service levels for our customers. So notwithstanding the comments I made, there are some questions that I do have around, some particularly around our back office costs, yeah.
All right. Is there also going to be some kitchen sinking, though? I mean, last quarter, results reveal impairments to the tune of 47 million ringgit for property, plant and equipment. I mean, it's a trick, I would say. It's a trick that most CEOs like to start their term with a clean slate. Can we expect any more write-downs or impairments?
Xiaoming, you're so cynical to think that that's how CEOs operate. But
it's a fact, Charles.
To be fair, like I said earlier, and again, without sort of repeating myself, phase one of what we need to do with Post Malaysia is fix the basics. It's hard for us to really think about who we want to be when we grow up until we really fix the basics. And the basics include our finances. You know, so the loss numbers you just mentioned are unacceptable. We need to address that. That's my responsibility to do so. So
Charles, is the basics actually, when you think about it and you drill down, really the postal services segment itself? I mean, it contributes 75% of revenue, but still continues to be loss-making. And this is despite new postal tariffs that were implemented in February last year. There are still postal service requirements by the government, like daily mail delivery, man post office within a certain radius. I mean, have you had some discussions with the government with regards to these obligations? Because all these require certain high levels of fixed costs.
You know, the basics really are pretty fundamental. So how much do we charge and what does it cost us to deliver our products, whether it be mail or parcel? So in both cases, and clearly, as you noted, we made a loss. We have that line round the wrong way, those lines round the wrong way. It's costing us more than what we're charging. So we need to fix that. And that means we need to, you know, look at our sort of the levers and drivers of cost. And again, only been here 7 weeks, but the good news is there is a plethora of opportunities, none of which includes our frontline employees, back to your question earlier on. So I'm, you know, again, I'm not worried. I don't lose any sleep over that at all. We can reverse those two lines relatively quickly, both the cost and what we charge our customers. I've spoken to lots of Malaysians already, lots of customers already, and asked them what they think about Post-Malaysia. And there's a lot of love for Post-Malaysia, but they're also unhappy with our service level. And it's difficult for us to really move forward until we reverse that and change that. And again, like I mentioned, without getting into specifics, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, we've already seen about a 20-point improvement in service level, which is fantastic. I'm so impressed and so pleased with the operators who have reacted so positively and the unions who have been really supportive in us delivering on that. So we're already making substantial gains in terms of the core part of our business, our service level.
But Charles, the issue is that Post Malaysia is a listed company, see. So if you weren't listed and you were part of the government entity, I think, you know, fine. There is definitely no debate as to whether postal services is a social obligation or even a need. I see it as actually almost a public infrastructure. And even post offices serve a greater purpose for a lot of people and provide essential services like bill paying, renewal licenses, and in Malaysia, Amanah Saham services. But the thing is that Post Malaysia is also listed. So you also have obligations to shareholders to maximise profit, and all these services come with high costs. So how do you balance the two then? Isn't this the dilemma that Post Malaysia faces?
Not really. I don't think it is. I don't think it's all. I think it's and. We have a responsibility from a universal service obligation, and we will leverage that. And so that's my point, is that rather than seeing a universal service obligation as being a roadblock to being successful for our shareholders and everybody else, actually leverage it. I'll give you a real life example. Back when I was here in the early 2000s, East Malaysia, volumes weren't particularly high. Today, they're huge. We do 30 or 40 tons a day. Who else can deliver to all those locations? Who else can deliver to Terengganu, all of the state of Terengganu? Who else can deliver to all of Kedah? Not many.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Charles Brewers, Group CEO of Post Malaysia. After the break, we spend more time discussing the turnaround plan for this loss-making group, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. In the hot seat this morning is newly appointed Group CEO for Post Malaysia, Charles Brewer. Just a moment ago, we were talking about the legacy snail mail business, and is it at odds with the fact that this is a listed company? Charles, I want to shift a little bit away from the postal service to the courier service. So fortunes, of course, tied very closely to the e-commerce business, which has boomed with the pandemic. But yet, I see a 17% decline in volumes in the last results. Meanwhile, I think we all know it's an extremely competitive business. 109 courier licenses in Malaysia. So how is Post Malaysia going to achieve its goal of being the courier company of choice for e-commerce businesses then?
The parcel growth globally on the back of e-commerce. So if you look at sort of global statistics, pre-COVID, something like 10% was bought online. Domestically growing at about 9% year on year, and cross-border growing at about 27%. COVID came along and then tripled that and quadrupled that. And to your point, so number one, it's about, like I said earlier, it's about making sure that we provide a really, really great service for our customers. So how we will win in the parcel segment is by making sure that we have a differentiated product offering. So when you order, you know it's going to be delivered. That trust element is really, really high.
How's it's competitive? Some of your peers, GDAX, JNT, I know you don't want to comment on them specifically, but they are very willing to drop prices. They seem to be able to deliver very quickly. Whilst in the past, I think you would have seen the social media comments that Post Laju isn't always the most reliable. Packages come very late.
Certainly have an opportunity to significantly improve our service. So no question about that. It's not necessarily about being the biggest. Volume brings scale. Scale allows you to lower your cost of production, no question about it. But in the same context, you don't necessarily have to have 80 or 90 or 70% market share. You need to have an equitable market share that allows you to drive down your cost of production, but also make sure you're choosing the right customers that come into your environment. So in terms of your comment around what others charge, I think they probably have a slightly different strategy right now. And again, not talking about anyone individually, but startup companies, companies are not listed, typically look to scale and scale quickly. Price is a great way of doing that. But whether or not it's sustainable is a whole different question. And you can look at many examples over the last 2 or 3 years, domestically and internationally, where that environment changes quite quickly when they list. And listing for some of those companies that you talked about is not too far away. And then their shareholders will expect a return in the same way as our shareholders expect a return.
Going back to the restructuring, is the solution then to consider a breakup of Post Malaysia, strip out the legacy postal mail delivery service, since that is a division that is facing structural decline and yet is still a social obligation and necessity?
I mean, it's still early days. You know, we're sort of trying to ask ourselves a question, where are the right markets to play? Which segments do we want to play in? How to win in those segments? There's still a lot of questions that I still need to answer. But I would say one of the strengths that we have is the strengths of the diversity of the products we offer. So we have logistics, aviation, courier, mail. We have a pretty broad set of product offerings. And just as you said earlier on, we know mail is structurally changed for good. But how do we leverage that? So, you know, if you've got a vehicle going out, one of the strengths that postal operators have vis-a-vis the competition globally is that you have mail and parcel in that vehicle. And that mail comes with profit and that parcel should come with profit. And you get a large, considerable productivity and scale opportunities from having that. So I think, again, there are some advantages from that perspective. We, you know, if we think about the freight and logistics environment in Southeast Asia and Malaysia, there's been a growing trend of digitalized approaches to those products. So, you know, should we digitalize our air and ocean freight products as we look at who we want to be going forward? So I think, again, in short, I think that generally speaking, one of our strengths is that breadth from end to end. Perhaps how we position it to the market may change as we think about it going forward, yeah. But more to come on that in the coming weeks.
But isn't there any part of the business which you had a look at and you think perhaps this isn't core and makes sense for disposal? For example, the Islamic pawnbroking business held under Post Al Rahnu. Well, there were media reports of a potential sale to Bank Muamalat for 200 million ringgit.
I won't comment on whether we will or won't sell any of our business units. I think that's inappropriate. But what I would say is that when we think about who we have in the stable, it's about what accretive value does that give the group. And in this particular case, in the subject you've given, there is value in footfall. And so when we have 640 odd retail points across Malaysia, as I mentioned earlier on, that's a huge strength. And our customers love it. So how do we create and offer products in those retail points that are good for our shareholders, but also good for our customers and create footfall? So, you know, again, I'm not the first person to raise that. For the, you know, retail has been fighting and struggling with this for some time. How do you create physical footfall for people to come in? So whether it be Post Arano, whether it be the road tax, whether it be passports, or whether it be your electricity bill, or whether it be paying for your internet or whatever else, I think if it means people coming to our branches, they're likely to use 2, 3, 4 other products whilst they're there. And that's good for our balance sheet. So I wouldn't for 1 second suggest that we're going to do or change our strategy from that perspective. It's really about what makes sense for our customers going forward.
What about properties though? When I look at the annual report, top 10 properties listed there have a collective book value of more than 300 million ringgit. Two come to mind and they're in Shah Alam. Do they have development value? I mean, even Singapore Post turned one of their properties into a mall for investment income.
Yeah. I'm not so sure we're going to be opening a mall anytime soon. So I'm sorry.
Well, you don't actually have to run the mall. You just need to sell it or be involved in it to monetize the land value.
Yeah, for sure. I think real estate, and certainly, you know, through COVID, real estate value, logistics real estate value has gone up considerably. So, you know, there's plenty of good examples of PPE and investment companies buying up land and properties across the world. I think Europe, there's one of the largest PPEs owns something like 50% of the logistics land that's available, or space that's available. So again, not to suggest what we may or may not do, but I'm certainly not. It's not on my list of top 10 things to do in the next few weeks.
But if you look at the financials, operating cash flow has deteriorated. It's now negative 36 million in the first half of this year. And, you know, you've had to draw down on 125 million borrowings to maintain liquidity. So in turn, of course, net gearing has increased to 0.42 times. So I wonder, you know, with this clock ticking, what's immediate that you have to do? Because so far this whole conversation, Charles, you seem very reluctant to cut costs. And that is probably the easiest of all levers. Growing your revenue might be more challenging because that's not always within your control, but cutting costs is.
Yeah, sure. I think just to clarify, so I think the question you asked me, would I be laying off people? I said that wasn't a priority for us. Cost efficiency, absolutely. Absolutely is a really key piece for us. We have a very, very large product range. All that product range creates downstream and upstream cost, which we don't necessarily need. And secondly, I'm not even sure our customers necessarily want that wider range of products. As just one example, if you look at our operation, we have a fantastic sort center in Shah Alam. It's really fantastic. But there are countless examples in there where we can become more efficient. Today approaches and automation. So there's a lot of opportunities, a long list of opportunities, and that's a cornerstone of what we will do to turn around the business. And as I mentioned earlier on, every single second of productivity equals dollars. So it's a really important space for us.
And if I look at the share price, currently it's hovering around 70 cents. It's a pretty sharp drop from where it used to be. 5.75 ringgit in April 2017, for example. I'm just curious, you know, from a corporate finance perspective, would it be better to take Post Malaysia private to restructure? After all, it is trading below book value of 1.18 ringgit. Has that been considered, Charles?
Not, again, in my 7 weeks, no. And not something, as I said earlier on, that's on the agenda. I think, as I said earlier on, we're very, very much focused on getting those basics right. And if we do that, and you know, I slightly missed a question you asked earlier, so it's linked to this. Cash flow, share price, etc., is a function of results. The moment we turn a dollar, 1 ringgit profitable, that cash flow problem becomes less of an issue. And it has been a challenge, no question about it. But it can become significantly less of a challenge when you're no longer making a loss. So as I said earlier on, the priority for us right now is getting those basics right. So that's the immediate priority. And as I said earlier, I'm very comfortable we're going to get there fairly quickly.
Okay, because that was your fourth pillar, right, in terms of the transformation of Post Malaysia.
Yeah, but it's not just about the bottom line. It's not just about profit. When you think about sort of your financial position, you can get to a positive position very easily by, as you mentioned earlier, on slashing costs, but that's not a sustainable solution. There's a wonderful phrase in a sort of a vicious cycle and a virtuous cycle. And again, you mentioned Deutsche Post DHL. Back in the days when we had some challenges at Deutsche Post DHL, it turned into a vicious cycle. So cut cost, service degrades, your revenue goes down, you have to cut cost again. So it's a vicious cycle. A virtuous cycle is fixing that. And as you make a single dollar, reinvesting in the business so that you continue to improve your service. That's very much the model that we want to aim for, is fix the basics, start delivering a single ringgit profit, and then we can invest back in the business to create a sustainable future.
On that note, thank you for your time. Today on The Breakfast Grill was Charles Brewer, Group CEO of Post Malaysia. I'm Wong Shaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.